Hello, can you hear me? That's really loud. Whoa. Hi everybody. Welcome to General Assembly. How many, by a show of hands, how many people have actually been here? Most of you. Whoa, cool. So second question, by a show of hands, how many of you are here for the first part, which is how we changed our careers at Dogtown? Cool, so about half of you. And then the latter of that, how about how to lead a successful team? Cool, so some of you for both, so that's awesome to hear. So welcome to General Assembly. If you guys, most of you have been here, but just a brief history. A lot of people don't know this, but we started in New York. So that's where our headquarters are at. We have 15 campuses around the world, and we teach anything under the tech umbrella. So UX design, web development, and anything technology related. So like digital marketing, business, and all those classes too. And these guys can tell you more about it because they are instructors, alum, and Mark has actually worked with us a lot here, and they'll introduce themselves in a bit. But if you're interested in any of our classes, whether it be part-time or full-time, it's a great way to just level up from where you're currently at in your career, or just transition into a different career. And these little sheets on your chairs, if you're interested, fill them out, give them to our front desk, and then somebody will be in contact with you like tomorrow. If you want to chat about anything that you think might fit what you're looking for. So I won't take any more time, and I'll hand the mic to Mark here, other Mark, and they will get into it. Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you so much. How's everybody doing tonight?
Great.
Yeah, great. We got a nice group here. I'm liking the energy. Beautiful faces, beautiful energies on the inside and out. So let's get started here tonight. So we've got a couple different subject matters that we're gonna hit, and it's our intention to make this as fun, as educational, informative, valuable for you as possible. So that's our intention and commitment here today. So we're gonna mix it up with some good stories about how we got to where we're gonna be, or how these guys actually got to where they're gonna be, as well as some tips, tricks that they found to be very valuable in terms of building successful teams and thriving in the workplace. One thing about me is I'm all about openness, honesty, and no bullshit. So I really wanna get to the root of, you know, what made you guys choose your career path and brought you where you are today, and just give us the juicy, honest, valuable stories that we can relate to and can inspire us. So are you guys game for that?
100%.
All right, so let's rock and roll. So we've got an amazing panel today, and we've got Mark, we got Kim, we got Justin, all leaders at Dogtown Media in Santa Monica. And is anyone familiar with Dogtown? Couple hands in the house, so I'll give you a quick description. So Dogtown was formed by Mark and his business partner back in 2011, and they've absolutely blown up. They've developed over 100 apps for huge companies around the world. They've developed apps and worked with Google, with Lexus, with Citibank, United Nations, all sorts of huge global brands, and have won a bunch of distinguished awards in their field. Their clients have raised hundreds of millions of dollars for these apps, and they're just on a roll and actually growing internationally, and are also really good partners and friends of General Assembly. So that is Dogtown. Anything I miss out, like, it's really important to add to the narrative?
Yeah, I'd say, like, in a nutshell, we are a mobile technology studio, and we're very focused on not just the tech that we know of right now, here and now, but also the stuff that's cutting edge and going to be present in everybody's lives 5 years in the future. So we do a lot of work with venture-backed startups that are in stealth mode and innovative organizations that think like startups to disrupt their own businesses and make a big dent in the universe. So here tonight, we're going to be talking about a little into what makes a team and how we all come together with the same type of vision to do what we do with passion and motivation every single day.
So we're going to start it out with a 45-minute panel, and then the last 30 minutes is going to be a Q&A. So feel free to jot down any questions that you have, and don't be shy. So we're going to start it out. We're going to get to know you guys a little bit. We're going to start out with Justin Hall here, who is the senior iOS engineer at Dogtown Media. And Justin, take us back to that pivotal crossroads, that career moment when you chose your career path. I want to know what your life looked like out on the outside. I want to know what it looked like internally, how it felt, and some of the steps that you took that have brought you to where you are today.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think when I decided to make the jump into tech, specifically become an iOS developer, at the time I was working for a commercial real estate company in Manhattan. So probably the opposite of what I do now. And I remember I was like kind of looking for that next like move in my career. And so I was thinking about other companies to apply to. And I was looking at them and I was like, I don't want to work for any of these companies, to be honest. So so I was like able to save up enough money. I quit and basically decided to teach myself iOS programming almost full time. So I was just kind of all day, head in the books, tutorials and stuff like that. And then eventually that's kind of what brought me here today.
Cool. How did you choose iOS? You could have done anything in the world.
Yeah, that's a good question. So I was always interested in tech. Like I would read TechCrunch and kind of was plugged into the community for the most part. And I kind of saw mobile as kind of the future of how people are going to interact every single day. So I thought about some web development boot camps, but then quickly I didn't really see much for iOS. That's kind of when I first went the self-taught route. But yeah, kind of I mulled that over for a little bit, but ultimately decided iOS because I thought that was kind of be the future of you know, just smartphones, and that was kind of the way that the world was heading. So.
Okay, and how long ago was that big decision?
I think this was, I left my company November 2014, and I got my iOS developer account in January 2015.
Wow, congratulations, right?
So
4 years?
Yeah.
Or 3 years, that's really amazing.
Appreciate it.
Has there been something that you would say that was just so valuable for you that was the catalyst for your growth or success?
I think so, yeah. Definitely during learning, it was pretty dark times. Like I remember it was middle of the winter in New York. Like I was barely leaving my house and I was just teaching myself how to code all day, which is, you know, mildly depressing for anyone who went down that road before. But yeah, so I think when I was able to first get an app published, that's when I was kind of like, okay, cool. I think I can do this. And like, you know, it's just like anything. Anytime you make a big decision in your life, there's always like a kind of, you know, feeling that hesitation, did I make the right move? But I think that was kind of the defining moment. I was like, okay, cool. Like this is definitely what I want to do for the next at least few years.
That's awesome. Let's give him a round of applause. Gotta love when people go after what they really want and to be successful in it. It's no easy task. So I acknowledge you for a rapid rise.
Thank you.
Yeah. So let's move on to Kim. And Kim, take us to that pivotal crossroads moment in your life. Where were you at? What did your life look like? How'd you feel?
So I was a graphic designer before. I was working for Fossil, the handbag and watch company, as a graphic designer, but I was kind of just like a cog in the wheel, and I was working a lot on production projects where I would take somebody else's design and kind of just like fit it into different sizes. And I was kind of sick of that and I wanted to be more creative. I wanted to have a job where I had more say in like what the design looked like. And I kind of started looking for other graphic design jobs, but they were all really similar and really production oriented. So I knew that I wanted to pivot into digital also. So I started kind of looking around and I saw UX and I saw the class here. And I looked into it more, I did tons of research, and I decided it was something that I really wanted to do. And then once I started the class here, I was super excited because it was based in like logic instead of just like subjective opinion on whether something was good design or not, which was kind of just all of what graphic design was, and that was another thing that was bothering me about it. So I was happy to find that balance in like UX design.
That's awesome. Mm-hmm. Cool. So you came to General Assembly and you learned the UX and UI design. Mm-hmm. What'd you do next?
So after the class, there was pretty much no in-between time. I started working at Dogtown right away. GA kind of helped us find each other. I've been working at Dogtown ever since, and it's been a really great experience. It was kind of lucky because it's kind of hard to find a company where you feel like you fit really well and you love the culture and you love the people and you love the work that you do. And I feel like I'm super lucky in that I have that balance there.
Awesome. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And to the CEO of Dogtown Media, Mark Fisher. Mark, take us back to 2011 and your entrepreneurial journey. What was that crossroads moment?
I feel like it started a few years prior. I was watching the keynote at WWDC when Steve Jobs got on stage and announced to the world a brand new invention called the App Store. And I was totally blown away. I'm like, oh my God, this is what I've been waiting for. A way to build computer technology that runs natively on your device. So I spent the next 2.5 years working nights and weekends and learning how to become a UX designer for mobile, a UI designer for mobile, and then an iOS developer for mobile. And then also looking for my technical co-founder that was better than myself at coding, as it was never really my core competency. After I found him, it took another 9 months of co-founder dating before we joined forces. And I would go over to his house and sit on his couch and shoot the shit for days and days, nights and weekends, until finally we were on a road trip together and decided it was time to jettison from what we were doing. My co-founder had a cool exit from the cybersecurity company that he founded, and I left the digital agency that I had formerly founded as well to roll over our skill sets into Dogtown Media. And we started just as two guys on a couch dreaming up app ideas. And our very first app that came to market was actually Dog Boogie, which was an Instagram for dog owners, which is kind of unique because it wasn't just Instagram, but we programmed a soundboard into the camera that when pointed at the dog, you could press a button and your phone would oink, meow, or bark to get the dog's attention. And it worked like a charm. We had 50,000 downloads within the first couple months and saw a lot of traction. And we were really good at getting people ingratiated into the experience that we created, but we weren't so good at making money. And that's kind of how we ended up pivoting into the business model that we are at today, where we partner with entrepreneurs, founders, and execs to take their vision and ideas and to work together to build something from idea to app store all the way through.
Congratulations. So was that one of the apps that helped you raise hundreds of millions of dollars? The dog app? So I want to go one level deeper in terms of how you guys found your career path and just ask you this personal question. Why not, right? So what was, and we'll start with Mark here on this one. What do you feel like was your biggest personal breakthrough that supported you in becoming the leader and the boss that was able to build this big company?
The biggest breakthrough that I had was building a team and trusting in other people to be able to rise to the occasion, to work together, to complement each other's strengths and weaknesses, and to be aligned with the same vision and to build a culture to move forward. I used to try to do everything myself, and I would work 20-hour days and basically work myself into like a stress-induced sickness at some points. And once I broke through, I was able to start like looking at people as partners and having a vested interest and really being able to build something greater than ourselves together.
Cool. Thank you, Mark. Kim, you want to answer that same question?
Repeat the question.
Sure. Just what did it take from you? What do you feel was like your biggest breakthrough that supported you in achieving that rapid success in terms of deciding you wanted to come to GA and then scoring the job immediately out with Dogtown?
So I think there's two things. There's before I took the class, the final push that was like, yes, I want to do this was that I really wasn't passionate about graphic design anymore and I was ready to pursue something new. And I was super excited about getting into more of the digital world and designing for something that I truly believed was going to be like the future forever. So I would say that was one. And then the other was during my first week of class here, we went through like a very brief like overview of the entire UX process. And then by the end of the week, we were supposed to go through the entire process and build like a prototype of an app, which was crazy. And it was super, super struggly and like stressful. But at the end of it, I was like, I can't believe I built this thing in like a week. And it turned out really good. Like everybody's turned out great. And it was really like a nice, like encouraging thing to have that just in 1 week.
Cool. Thank you. And Justin?
Yeah, I think I don't know how many developers are in here, but kind of development is made up of a bunch of small wins. You know, you get stuck on something for a really long time and you're like, okay, that's it. You kind of feel like heading back. And then as soon as you get past it, you always eventually do, your confidence boost definitely goes up a little bit. So I think during the learning process, it was like getting over those humps is kind of what really, you know, propelled me to keep going and keep pursuing this. I think number two is also, I was a teacher here at the iOS Immersive, which is the 12-week boot camp, and that was very eye-opening because learning it's one thing and then having to teach it back is completely different. And then by the end of class, I had some students teaching me stuff, which was awesome to see. So I think that was another thing that kind of was like the aha moment is like, not only do I like doing it, but I love teaching it back as well. So.
Cool. Thank you, Justin. Next question I want to ask you guys, what do you wish you knew then that you know now? So if anyone finds themselves in a similar situation today where they're trying to figure out what they want to do next or want to enter into this space, what would you say? So let's start with Kim this time.
I don't know. That's a tough question.
That's why I asked it.
I think that I would want to know how happy I would be with the choice because like thinking back now, it seems like it was just like a one day, like I was like, oh yeah, I guess I'll do this. But it wasn't really like that. It was like a couple weeks of like turmoil, like should I do this? Should I not do this? And like worrying that it was gonna be like a waste of money and crazy for me to like have to pivot my career like that. But in the end, like it would have been nice to know that it was the right thing to do and that I would be really happy with my choice.
Nice. Justin?
To be honest, it was probably that I wish I would have done it sooner. Like looking back, I think I did it just in the right time, but if I could do it again, I probably would have done it a few years before. You know, a lot of it had to do with fear of jumping into the unknown. But it's just one of those things where you're going to take your licks at first, but you know, once you start feeling comfortable and confident with whatever the new skill set is, you're going to look back, as Kim was saying, and really, really be glad you did it.
Nice. Big testament to taking that leap, having that courage. And Mr. Fisher, what about you? What do you wish you knew then that you know now?
The importance of user testing. So I'm not sure how many of you have done this big mistake over and over and over again than I have, but I tend to fall in love with my own ideas and dream up like almost delusions of grandeur that they're the best idea ever and run with it before testing it. And what I know now is that it's a very costly mistake as far as time and resources to jump in with both feet without testing the waters first.
Cool, thank you guys. One more question on career transitions, creating your dream career, and then we will segue into the second portion, which is talking about building successful teams. So let's start out with Mark with this question, and that is, what do you love most about your career, and what frustrates you the most about it?
What I love most about what I get to do every day is it's the right mix of creativity and the analytical mind. So I have very talented people that that have been brought onto the team, and together we're able to create things that like I formerly thought were impossible. So we do a lot of really neat stuff with like machine learning, with robotics, with automation, with life-saving wearable devices that are rolled out to thousands of people in the medical field that are suffering from chronic illnesses. And to see the practical applications of what we're able to create is the most inspiring thing that I'm able to, you know, bring to this world.
Great, thanks. Let's shift over to Justin.
I one of the things I like most is that I think development kind of gets this rap that it's highly analytical and there's a lot of math and stuff, which there is, but it's weirdly become my creative outlet because you can tackle a problem so many different ways, and I definitely take a lot of pride in you know, my solution and how things, you know, come to fruition, and creating something from nothing is a very, you know, artistic sentiment, right? So I was really shocked and surprised how, you know, left or right brain is the art one.
Right brain.
That actually is. So yeah, it's something I take pride in, and something I can kind of see something come to fruition, take shape. Is probably what I like most about what I do.
Okay. And what about on the other side of that? What frustrates you?
Developing is just frustrating in general, the whole thing. Like, you think something's gonna work and it doesn't. Something worked yesterday, doesn't work today. That kind of stuff just bothers you till no end. But like I said, once you get past that, and you always do, it's relieving.
Yeah, one of those real things and an opportunity for learning and growth.
Exactly.
Enhancement.
Absolutely.
Innovation.
Absolutely.
And Kim, what do you love about what you do, and what's the most frustrating part?
I think what I love is similar to what Mark said. UX and UI design is kind of a really nice balance between analytical and being creative. So I really like that part of it. And user testing is really fun and really interesting but you have to be okay with your ideas not being the right ideas, which is kind of the tough, frustrating part, is you think that this is the right solution and then you test it with people and then it ends up not being. So that can be frustrating, but it's also really rewarding when you start getting pointed in the right direction of what the real solution should be. And it's kind of nice that it doesn't come from yourself. It's like a communal effort between like me, the rest of the design team, and the users as well, who give their feedback.
All right, thank you. So if there's any other questions that you have in regards to their career development, their career path, you'll have the opportunity to ask that once we talk about how to build a successful team. So let's talk about building a successful team. Obviously, a very important thing when you are serving clients who are paying you a lot of money. There's a lot of different roles, a lot of different work in progress elements that you're juggling. So Mark, let's start with you here for this question. What makes an effective team?
I'd say first and foremost is a shared vision of what we're creating and why we're doing it. That would be step one. It's like, without the shared vision and without the belief in the day-to-day experience, there is no motivation, there is no passion, there is no reason to put in that extra hour of work, 2 hours of work, to study on nights and weekends to become an expert, and to really push the limits of what I believe I can and what we actually can together. After that, I'd say cross-functional teams, so putting people that think differently in the same room together so that they can have civil discourse and use their disagreements to find agreements is really beneficial. So we have a lot of cohesion between like development and design and product, and it works fantastically well to have dedicated teams working in close quarters to share thoughts, to share knowledge, and to build upon each other's strengths and weaknesses.
I got to ask you a follow-up question to that, because it sounded great, right? You got a team of all-star players, everyone's got their perspective, got their insight, got their expertise. But it's one thing to look at that and look at all the puzzle pieces fitting together, and then you've got, you know, people's attitudes and egos and you wanting to be right and so forth. So how do you actually curate those conversations where people get to like speak their mind and speak their opinion in a way that creates a place for, you know, understanding and teamwork and progress?
I'd say that the biggest thing is to not micromanage. To take my foot off the pedal. I'm no longer diving into product the way that I used to, and I believe that everybody on the team is capable and able to dive in, to discover, and to make their own mistakes, and to iterate quickly.
Cool. Anything else that you want to add that are key components to having an effective team?
What I really pick up on is folks that are going to get along with each other in the team environment. I think that's really important, that like they're a cultural fit as well as a skill fit. Everybody that works on our team, we have a small and nimble team. It comes through the doors and meets with me personally time and time again. And one of the biggest things is like recruiting and retaining talent is all around people that are having fun doing this for a living and love coming to work and love the people that they work with.
Do you have any special ways or creative ways of vetting prospective employees or things that you like to see when people are employing that, or when they apply, that show that they are a qualified, good applicant?
I ask random questions like, what's your favorite app? What did you have for breakfast? Tell me how you would make breakfast if I gave you the chance. I'm interested in asking the questions that people don't normally ask to see how, when prodded, folks respond. If they respond nervous or antagonistic, that means that they can't respond well under pressure. And this is kind of a high-pressure field because the digital products we're creating will go on to affect tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands or millions of lives. And it's really important that we're all able to work together in a way where like we're not going to blow up at each other or walk off the job. Like it's intense working in this field and working in technology, and we got to be able to be responsible and answer tough questions on the spot and hold our ground.
Great, thank you, Mark. One more question, and then we'll move on here. I'm putting Mark on the hot seat here. Is it hot?
Toasty.
It's toasty. So, you know, people have a job, right? For you, this is your vision. You're the CEO. You're the architect. And you mentioned that a very important thing to build an effective team is making sure that everyone has a shared general vision. Once again, that's great when there's blue skies, and it's not as easy when people's real problems and challenges and circumstances in their lives present themselves in the workplace. So how do you keep people motivated and connected to the overall vision of the company?
I think that's a great question, and it comes down to reminding ourselves of what we're doing and how it affects others. So a good example of that is over the past couple of years, I've been very focused on building digital products with purpose. And recently, we released an app that was in conjunction with CBS and an organization called When Georgia Smiled that was for women that suffer from domestic violence. And this app is hidden and looks just like a newsfeed, but has buttons in it that allow a woman to send out a distress signal in case sexual assault or abuse is happening. And that distress signal goes out to members of her contact list in order to get help when they need it most. And this has gone on to be downloaded hundreds of thousands of times, and I don't have direct figures, but I know for a fact that it's gone on to save lives. And that's the biggest motivating factor of like why I wake up in the morning and do what I do. And I think that others can, you know, share those experiences and take pride in them and really hold our heads high that we're doing something to add good to this world instead of just out to make a quick buck or build another Instagram with a twist.
Nice. I like the cohesiveness, the responsibility, the bigger purpose, and really tying in teamwork both internally and externally with your clients as part of the picture. So, Kim, question for you. You had mentioned before that you really enjoy working at Dogtown. So why do you think that Dogtown has such a great team? Like, what are the characteristics within the organization that you feel really make it effective?
So I think it's a combination of the personalities of the people that work there. Like, nobody has egos. There's no stupid questions. Anybody can talk to each other and be completely honest. And there's a really good, like, sense of collaboration and no sense of, like, I don't know, like, crazy hierarchy. Like, everybody's kind of on the same level and talks to each other. And just, like, really good synergy in people's work ethic and passion for the projects that we work on. I think it's just a combination of all of those things.
Nice. Cool. And Justin?
Yeah, pretty much echoing what Kim said. It's funny, like, the culture at Dogtown is, I don't really look at everyone as coworkers. A lot of them I look at as friends, you know, hang out after work, and I would approach them just like I would any other friend. I think Dogtown's done an excellent job of kind of, you know, manufacturing and organically growing the culture where anyone can go to anyone at any time, open communication, open doors, and it kind of really makes for a fluent atmosphere where people just get a lot of really solid projects done, just like Mark was saying, touching hundreds of thousands, if not millions of lives. So.
And Justin, your experience working with your clients, working with big companies, what have you learned about leadership working with some of the other, you know, big companies that Dogtown works with on a day-to-day basis?
Sure. So I think one of the most important things that I've learned is leadership is making sure that your teams are diverse. I've definitely seen firsthand from a lot of teams I've been on that it definitely helps have people from a lot of different backgrounds, a lot of different cultures. I think that's what really makes things gel. If you got kind of the same viewpoints on a bunch of different topics, you kind of end up with a similar product. So having that wide range of diversity, I think really, really adds to the success of the product, ultimately.
Great. And Kim, what about you? Whether you things you've learned from your clients or things you've learned about leadership within the organization?
Yeah, I would say things that I've learned from the clients is kind of like sometimes it's what not to do for ourselves internally. Because we work with some like really big corporate clients, and you would think that being so big and structured that they would be super organized, but a lot of times they're not. And we're left to like kind of pick up the pieces for them. So I think like learning from sometimes their mistakes helps us succeed more as well.
Great. Thank you. Wow, we've really rifled through all these questions so fast. You guys are not very long-winded. So, question, I like this one. This one's a good one. This one is listed under happiness and fulfillment. So I am curious to know, for you, Mr. Fisher, how do you foster innovation, learning, and creativity?
Great question. I look for inspiration all around, and I kind of am a mix between an analytical and a creative person. So I think of creative ways to solve problems in our everyday lives. And then I look at like some of the cool technologies that are coming out and kind of figure out ways that we could challenge everybody on the team to problem solve by adopting this new technology. So an example of it is we put out an app called Medbox, which was an internal hack, where we wanted to solve a problem of elderly and chronically ill folks that were forgetting to take their medication. This leads to about, I think, 400,000 deaths a year and $300 billion in emergency room visits. So we not only built this app that reminds you of when to take your medication, but also synced it with your Apple Watch, so you get buzzed on your wrist when it's time to take your diabetes pills, your blood pressure medication, or to administer this medication to the person that you're caregiving for. That was just one of many different things that we do. We also ran a really cool hack internally that used facial recognition to unlock a door lock. Justin has been pivotal in putting together like some of our dev tools outside of the office, working on nights and weekends, building like an amazing AR kit that transforms the way that we kind of interact with the real world and brings everyday objects to life like never before. And Kim's been involved in a bunch of really neat stuff in like the robotics space, and especially with like user testing and discovering. There's nothing more interesting than those aha moments that you get from somebody telling you candidly why they don't like that button, even if they don't tell you directly why they don't like it.
Basic communication right there. I want to ask the three of you guys this same question, because I think you everyone will find this to be interesting and informational. But I'm curious to know what the market is telling you. So what you're seeing in the market in terms of iOS engineering, you know, if you're seeing any trends, if you're seeing any opportunities maybe for, you know, people hiring. I'm just curious to hear your take on where things are at, where you see opportunity. So go ahead, Justin.
Yeah, despite, you know, the App Store getting released, I don't know how many years ago, I just feel like, you know, there's, I don't have exact figures, but, you know, how many hundreds of apps get released every single day. Now you're seeing a lot of bigger companies, enterprise-wide companies, start really hiring out dev positions, specifically more junior devs, too, just because everyone realizes how critical their iOS app is to their business. From a market standpoint, I still think, although apps have been around for a long time, it's definitely an uptick as far as growth and market expansion overall.
Where do you think is the best place to be professionally within that sphere?
Yeah, as far as skill set or like location?
Yeah, that sounds good.
Yeah.
Skill set, location.
Yeah, actually, I'm not just saying this. I am really thankful to have started the career in Los Angeles. You know, San Francisco is obviously the hub, but a lot of companies are moving down this way and popping up all over the place. So I think LA specifically is long. I think Denver, and I know DC is kind of Austin. But I think LA is definitely one of those rising areas as far as up and coming dev talent. As far as skill set goes, I mean, Mark alluded to this earlier. Now, with these buzzwords like machine learning and AR and all that stuff being compacted in the phone, I think there's a lot of opportunity to kind of, before it was just kind of like a generalized iOS developer, which is still very important, but with all these new skill sets coming out, I think you're gonna start seeing specific skills within iOS that are gonna be really valuable to companies.
Great, thank you. And Kim, what market trends are you seeing? Where's the greatest opportunity?
I would say that between like corporate and startups looking for designers, it seems to be pretty evenly split. Like I don't really see a trend one way or the other, but I guess it's kind of important to know if you were to go into like UX UI design, like whether you want to be like a specialist or a generalist. And I would say like for me, I'm more of like a generalist. I kind of do both and I can do every part of the process. And I like that. For me personally, that works because I like the variety. But a lot of people want to specialize in like one single part of the process. And that works really well for corporate companies because they have so many employees and they have each person doing a separate thing. And it's kind of like an assembly line of the project going through each person. So yeah, I would say that, but in terms of like generalists or specialists, that's also like kind of split. It just depends. Startups want generalists, corporate companies want specialists, I would say.
And Mark, what's the lay of the land today? Where do you see the opportunity?
Great question. I'll approach this question from two standpoints. One is where we currently are, and one is where we're going. So where we currently are, following up on what Justin was saying, it's not just hundreds of apps that are being released into the App Store every day. It's 1,500 apps are just being released on iOS for the iTunes App Store alone. And then another 1,200 apps every day for the Android apps, the Google Play App Store for Android devices. Altogether, that's app stores with millions of apps living and residing and being downloaded and used constantly. The applications that we're seeing are becoming more robust, faster, smarter, more intuitive, and solving a lot of pain points. But the direction that we're headed is a post-mobile world where everything around you will sense who you are, what you like, and what you dislike, and turn the atmosphere into something that automatically alleviates the frustration. So smart homes will make it really comfortable when you get in, will cut down on your heating and your lighting electricity costs by automatically curating the environment to exactly what you like when you're there and turn everything off when you're not home or in that specific room. What we're seeing is everybody who is bringing an Alexa or a Google Home into your house is interacting with the future of artificial intelligence that will then propel into the robotics world, where you'll have literally your own version of Rosie, just like in the Jetsons, in your house, following you around doing chores and being your personal assistant physically instead of just being cemented in the corner. What we're also looking into really heavily is augmented reality and the opportunities that you can get by wearing glasses or having contact lenses in the future that will augment your experience and overlay what you would see on your cell phone screen into your eyesight naturally and in a way that won't disrupt the average, like your day-to-day flow. Add to that sensors in smart cities that are going to regulate traffic and transportation, and the movement of autonomous vehicles on our roads is very real and going to be very disruptive. So all these technologies used to be disparate and siloed just a few years ago. And the big revolution is around all these technologies now talking to each other in something that I call convergence, which is really powerful and unlocks a great amount of value and will change each and everybody's lives in the very near future.
It's wild and exciting, and it sounds like the future of effective team building has an A and an I in it. So let's move on to the Q&A portion. Who would like to lead it off? Do we have a brave soul who's got a question? Yeah, here, I'll come to you.
Hi, thanks, panel. I got a question for you, Justin. Actually, going back to what you were saying about diversity in the team, a lot of people probably, you know, looking for a career change possibly into this area. I'd be curious, what makes a good diverse background, if you like? I'm sure we all have different backgrounds. I'm a photographer, actually. I have my whole career, so I'm a visual storyteller. And I'm trying to, myself, figure out where I fit possibly in this world, you know, if at all.
Yeah, absolutely. That's a great question. I wouldn't even consider diversity as far as, you know, your typical diverse backgrounds, like, race, ethnicity, you know, political views, whatever it is, the surface area, but just what makes you fascinating, right? Like, people can have, you know, similar looks, but it definitely comes from different interests, what people like to do. I mean, there's definitely an opportunity for you to whatever you bring to the table that would very much so help a team out. I think it just is kind of you being unique, you being you, and showing your true self. I think that's truly what makes a diverse team is not necessarily the surface area levels like ethnicity and all the stuff we talked about earlier, but just you being fascinating and you being yourself will really contribute to a team. Yeah, there's a spot for you, man, for sure.
Do either of you guys feel inclined to add anything to that?
Yeah, I think your situation is really cool and unique because you're creative, and creatives do really well in the technology sphere. An example I can give of something that we've been working on for a while is a company called WebDam. We built their iOS and Android apps, and it's a digital management rights platform for photographers like yourself. And a company like this would be searching high and low for somebody like you with the skill sets and the interest to dive into this field. And you could position yourself in any direction that you want in that type of firm, whether a product manager or a creative director or somebody who's a outside consultant, you know, having your say in shaping the future of this company.
Did that answer your question?
Yeah. Okay.
All right, nice. Anybody else? Questions? Don't be shy.
Yeah, go ahead.
Your hand popped up first. And feel free to direct the question at whoever you'd like the answer from.
Yeah, just curious with you guys about it. As a dev shop, what kind of work do you look for? What gets you excited internally Are you looking for those big corporate jobs with the big paycheck, or are you looking for those smaller gigs that might be a much more interesting product to work on? You know, what inspires you all internally? Thank you.
Great question. I think I can jump in first on this. From my perspective, there are kind of different segments that everything falls into. There's one that's like pay the bills, which pays the bills, keeps the lights on, but not that much fun. There's not much enthusiasm. It's just something we're doing. And we used to do a lot of that. And I made a conscious switch to doing things that were not only financially enticing, but something that's going to be a challenge, and more so than anything else, something that's going to have a positive influence in the world. And I'd say that positive influence and leaving our dent in the universe would be first and foremost as to the direction we're taking, because my belief is that money is a reward for doing good in the world, and that everything comes full circle and will be rewarded for hard work and for making other people's lives better.
Yeah, I think mine comes down to two specific answers there. I think the first is kind of like what Mark was saying, was impact. I do get a lot of fulfillment out of apps that are not necessarily enterprise, but are going towards a greater good. Definitely makes going to work a little bit easier. Then the second one is honestly, if I haven't worked with this specific SDK or framework or an emerging technology before, I really get excited when we get projects like that. If it's something I've done before, that's totally cool. It kind of makes it a little bit easier. But I do like the challenge of doing something that, for the first time, or something brand new to the market, just to kind of add it to the toolbox.
I agree about the emerging technology. I think that's what gets me excited the most, is just being able to work on something that's not super popular yet, and we're kind of like one of the first to try to break ground on the new technology, whether that's like an actual like new, way of working, like AI things, or whether that's just a new approach to some old way of doing things. We're coming at it from another direction. I think both of those things are really, really exciting.
Cool. Question back there.
Thank you. Thank you for this panel. It's been very helpful and very honest. So thank you for that. I have a question for Mark. When you first started the company, did you know that you always wanted to lead people, or did you want to just be behind the scenes?
That's a really good question. So at the time when I started the company, I actually had stage fright and was afraid of public speaking, little known fact. I was very introverted. I could be myself in small teams, but when I was put in front of a crowd like you fine folks, I would freeze up. So it was something that was kind of taught and like trial by fire. And I had a big breakthrough. I was given an opportunity to lead a workshop for 1,000 visiting Japanese students over 2 days. And when I rolled into the parking lot, I had like a panic attack and was totally losing my shit and was about to drive off and call in sick. And I don't know what came over me, but I just got over it and I walked in there and just gave the best presentation of my life. And that was my big breakthrough in a way that kind of transformed my life and how I approach building a team from scratch at the end of the day. And building cool technology at the same time.
Is there something that you did to overcome that, going from behind the scenes type of person to I'm the face of the company and people look up to me and people in the community look up to me too?
Good question, good follow-up question. So I was doing digital marketing in my former position, my former startup, and doing reputation management and a lot of search marketing and digital marketing for other founders. And it was a kind of a strange shift when suddenly I was able to do this for myself and get my face out there, and people started asking me questions. And it was just not something that I planned, and something that, a role that I stepped into, eventually willingly.
Thank you.
Question over there.
Yeah, so I guess as you guys were talking, you spoke a little bit about some of the solutions that you've been able to, I guess, produce in Dogtown, like such as the app that's a newsfeed that makes it very easy for people to ask for help. I'd be very interested to hear also about some of the problems that clients bring to you guys and the process that you guys went through to kind of land at the solution, perhaps also what some of the different alternatives were that you tested out.
So a lot of times, especially working with kind of smaller, more startup clients, they'll come to us with a fully fleshed out idea. They have this app really specific in mind, the features that they want for it, how they want it to look, everything. And while that's really cool because it's cool that they have like such a specific vision, but it doesn't allow for exploration and testing as much, which I think is what really makes a product great. So I think that is the problem when they have too specific of a vision in mind and then they don't want to deviate from it. And the way we solution for it, I guess, is kind of working with them and kind of explaining the value of user testing and the value of doing UX processes to really make their product shine, because at the end of it, you're not building it for yourself, you're building it for the user, so you got to make sure that they like it in the end of it. So yeah, that's what I would say.
To kind of go off what you're saying about problem solving, I think that's one of the highlights that we have at work. We do work with a pretty big robotics company, and I would like to think I was good at math until I met these guys. And we have to produce something for them that was just kind of next level, and it took us weeks to kind of brainstorm. We did, you know, scratch projects. We had a picture of a 360 image and we were drawing all over it and just to kind of like piece it together. And once we kind of got through that, I mean, it was like long, long, long days and nights. But once we finally got there, it was super rewarding. And the problem solving collaborative type environment is really awesome at Dogtown. And, you know, clients come to us a lot with like, hey, we want this to happen, but we don't know how or why or what. And that's for us to figure out, which is really cool. But I'd say pretty much every client will come to us with something that we're like, man, we're not sure how we're gonna do that. But then we just kind of go to the drawing board and it always works out.
Yeah. Mark, anything you want to add? I'm sure you do.
Yeah, R&D is the funnest part of the job at the end of the day. Like figuring out how to do something that's never been done before. Is a challenge that we rise to like every moment of every day. I'm a believer that in our team, everybody's a superhero and has like, as a superhero, has some sort of superheroic abilities. And it's finding that so that they can become a leader in that situation and help others shine and kind of push forward the momentum. When we're clueless, it's always happening organically. And our dedicated teams like reach out to the network to see who can fill in the gaps at the right moment. And it's always a puzzle that we're working on to complete with a limited amount of resources and a limited amount of time as our you know, headwinds.
Feel like it answered your question?
Yeah.
So from a startup perspective, most, as Kim mentioned, most startup founders are approaching us with their idea formulated, but it's very raw. And it's up to us to play the role of kind of like a psychiatrist to pull that vision out and then to go through user testing and test out these assumptions to see if they're true or false and do rapid prototyping. When it comes to bigger organizations, they have longer, bigger budgets and longer timelines. So we have more flexibility to kind of flesh things out. And a lot of times they come to us with like an RFP or the same, an idea of an app to solve XYZ pain points for them. So there's business methodologies that are driving their decisions. Is it going to make me money or is it going to save me money? At the end of the day, those are the two main motivators that we're given, and then we find out how best to do it by not solving your problem or my problem, but the end user's problem to add value to the ecosystem. Cool.
Question?
Yep.
Okay, so I think I'm hearing that, and forgive me, but I think I'm hearing that perhaps you used to have more, you would develop your own ideas, and now you pretty much are the shop for other ideas. Do you miss developing your own ideas and bringing those to fruition?
Definitely. Our bottom line is we spend 30% of our revenue on innovation and solving our own problems and building our own products at the end of the day. So we're constantly looking at ways to use our downtime effectively to build cool things out. A couple things that we did, like first and foremost, on our business development side, proposals used to take sometimes half a day, a full day, 2 days to build, to fill them out. And we had to pull a lot of members of the team from design and from development. And they would be pulled out of the projects and be put heads down to line iteming out what our estimates would be for each one of the line, like features and functions that we'd be building in the future. Now we've used data science to extract our actual time that it takes to build each feature and function and have it pre-populated in something we call the BD tool. So we can pump out a proposal in a matter of minutes instead of a day. Add to that that 90% of apps share common components. So anybody here familiar with like using Facebook or Gmail to log into an app? Yeah? So we've taken that pain point out of the development cycle by building an entire modularized backend system that allows us to pre-populate code and get to market 500% faster. So what you, sometimes even quicker than that. So what used to take weeks to build out a customized backend now takes us as little as 10 minutes for some of these modules. So we're gonna keep doing innovation and hopefully move more into product as this year plays out.
I gotta ask a follow-up question to that one, that's good. So if you could develop your own app today, your dream app, passion app, what would it be?
It would be for you, Mark Shapiro. Areyoubeingreal.com. My dream app would combine my two passions, which is healthcare and technology. So our healthcare system is completely a house of cards. It's inefficient, it's slow, it's bureaucratic, and it's based around treating people after they get sick and not providing preventative care to prevent them from getting sick in the first place. So a few years back, we worked with a startup in the South Bay, and we co-developed a patch that goes on your chest. And inside this patch is a small Bluetooth beacon and a small monitoring device that monitors your heart rate, your breathing rate, your body temperature, and it also has a fall monitor in it. And this data can be transmitted to your physician anywhere in the world, or your caregiver, or your friends or family in case you are an elderly person and you fall out of bed, or you have a heart attack while you're sleeping, or you suffer from a stroke when nobody's around. And the big thing is that I immediately saw impact in everyday lives that this was rolled out to, and it's currently being tested by the National Health Service in Australia. So if I could do one thing, and one thing only for the next 10 years, it would be to work on products like this. Yeah.
Hello. So you talked about, you know, we're talking about leading teams, but on the other side of that, you're also leading client teams in a lot of cases, especially with corporate clients. And my question is if you could give us an example of your hardest corporate client and how you're able to kind of guide and lead their team to, you know, the fruition of a successful project.
Okay. I would say our hardest corporate client, hard is the right word. They're really nice and they're really nice to work with, but they're their own worst enemy in that we have to like kind of rein them in and rein them back into reality because they have a lot of ideas and when we have meetings with them, they kind of go off on their tangent ideas and they're like, oh, but it would be really cool if we could do this. And then they go off on that for like 30 minutes and then we kind of have to rein them back in and we're like, okay, but let's focus on the MVP that we want to build first and then we'll do that, you know, in phase two or phase three. And so I guess reining them in is kind of our biggest challenge and our biggest like day-to-day like task that we have to do when we work with them. But yeah, I mean, we're really lucky right now. None of the clients are very difficult to work with. I would say more so the more difficult clients were actually the startup clients that we used to work with more so. Because they had such a specific vision, they were really attached to it and they didn't want to deviate from it at all. So that made it kind of harder to work with them. But the corporate clients are great in that respect because they know that their idea isn't God and they can let go of it and they'll let us explore for them. And so they're really nice to work with in that way.
Yeah, client management, I think, is always hard. You deal with so many different types of personalities. You got the unresponsive. You got the people who expect the world but, you know, don't really have the time or the money to pay for it. There's just all these different types. So that's something I think will always be there. But, yeah, I have a feeling that Kim and I are referring to the same clients. I have a sneaking suspicion that it's the same ones. But yeah, so it's just, you get a lot of different personalities in the same room. And to be honest, like, especially with our enterprise one, all with their own agendas, right? And to their own, visions of how they want to do, they all have, you know, bosses to answer to. So kind of managing that and helping that whole situation is always difficult, but we try to do the best we can, yeah.
You guys hit the nail on the head. Mm-hmm. Questions?
Yeah.
Hi, this question is for Justin. So, you know, as an iOS developer, there's been, especially with the increased amount of data that's coming in for the apps, you know, you're working increasingly with backend services. So especially, you know, given that you have corporate clients, you have to work a lot with the backend. So as an iOS developer, do you think it's necessary for iOS developer to learn more about backend and, you know, not necessarily trying to be full stack, but to be more effective in terms of working with backend developers?
That's a really good question. For those who aren't familiar, like a lot of the data that you see in your apps is actually coming from a server that's hosted somewhere. And as an iOS developer, our responsibility is to display that in a way that people can easily digest and understand. So the question is it a good idea for a iOS developer to learn more about how that data is on the how it's hosted on the server to make you a better developer? That's tough. I lean yes. I think if anytime you have the opportunity to learn how something works, especially when you interact with it that much on a day-to-day basis, I think that's a really, really good idea. Should you go and learn, you know, JavaScript or Vapor, which is the new Swift backend language? I don't think it's paramount to success as an iOS developer. But just knowing how that stuff works, and you get a lot of respect from backend devs if you can talk the language. So just having an overall understand of how backend architecture works, I think is super valuable, and I do highly suggest that. But to be able to make your own backend, I don't think it's necessary. But always good to know.
We got time for two more questions. We'll go to you first. He was faster. Wow, thank you for your honesty. Integrity is key here tonight, folks.
Thanks for sharing all your stories. The work you guys do sounds really awesome. I'm super curious about how you put the teams together. So you have all these different projects. Project comes in, and you've got all these great people. How do you decide, you know, these two designers and these four developers are going to work on this team with this product manager?
Really good question. So every time we work on a project, we assign a dedicated team. And even before the team is placed, we're thinking into what skill sets are required and what superheroes we're going to place like to do amazing feats. So if it's very fluid, we would bring Kim in, and she would be doing tons of like user research and user interviews and rapid prototyping before any code is even written. If it's very technical in nature, we're going to have a technical diagram built and figure out what pieces stick in where. So if it's very front-end heavy, we'll have iOS and Android developers that are front-end proficient working on it. If it's back-end heavy, of course, back-end developers. So it's a mix and match to kind of add the most value where it's called for at any given time. But it's always a kind of horse trade if we're really busy and don't have enough free resources to grow our team exponentially to make sure that we can deliver and meet expectations.
Is there a typical team? Is it just a typical team of two designers or developers or product managers, or is it not?
So let's say that we're building like an entire ecosystem. What usually works best is two designers, one that's very UX-centric and another that's more UI-centric, followed by two developers, or three developers, two usually on the front end and one working on the back end at the same time. And we work in agile sprints, so you're familiar with it. It's two-week increments where we blaze through certain portions of the project, features and functionality. And the way our teams work, we have the UX team embedded with the dev team. So everybody's talking and moving and designing and building flows and delivering assets and then implementing them all at the same time. So the margin for error is very low, but the way that we work is very effective and efficient, especially from a cost and acceleration standpoint.
Do you have product managers on the team?
We do. They're involved in everything. I can't leave them out. We love our product managers. Yeah, we have a technical director that steps in, and then a product/project manager, depending on the role that's needed.
Is there a fourth, or is that good? That's good. Okay.
Hi. Throughout the conversation, there was a lot of talk about skill sets and development of skill sets. What has been one skill set that was a struggle to overcome, and how did you overcome it as you did the transition?
I would say on the design side of things, user testing and user interviews was a struggle at first. They taught that a lot here at GA, but we didn't do a lot of it when I first started just because our clients were smaller then. They didn't have a big budget, so we were kind of worried about blowing a lot of money doing testing up front. But we kind of reevaluated the process and learned that doing the upfront testing actually saves money in the long run because you don't have to go back and fix mistakes that you made earlier. So I think learning where to do it in the process, how to do it, what's the most effective use of time when doing it, writing the script, kind of all of that was kind of like a learning as we go process, which was definitely interesting. But having done it so many times now, I think that we have a good process down pat, and the best way to learn it was actually to do it like in a real situation. Like you can do it in like a fake situation in school when you're learning, but the best way to like refine your process, I think, is just having doing it over and over.
Yeah, my opinion on that kind of has changed throughout the years. I used to in my former career, if someone was like, hey, do you want to take on this new project, my first reaction would be like, oh, I've never done that before. And it would kind of get freaked out, but now I really look forward to taking on new challenges that I haven't done, because it's actually, the benefits are twofold. It's something that you can add as, you know, as a skill set, something that you've worked on, but also it kind of, you know, it's very rewarding to take something that you have no clue, hey, I don't even know where to start, and then on the other side, producing a product out of it. So. So yeah, I don't shy away from anything new now, because it's always going to be a challenge. It's always going to be tough. But we always kind of make it through. But yeah, but if you asked me 4 years ago, anything I didn't know how to do, I was like, you do it. Yeah. So my kind of whole outlook on new things like that has changed quite a bit.
I'd have to speak into like some of my experiences that were built around solving my own problems. So I studied international business and I wanted to work in Wall Street as an equity trader. And when I graduated and started working like in an investment bank, that tie that I was wearing suddenly became a noose that was choking me tighter by the day. So I left and I started up my own now defunct startup called VidRiver. And I used to live in London. And when I lived in the UK, I wanted to watch US TV shows. And when I moved back to LA, I wanted to watch British TV shows. So what did I do? I built my own portal and stumbled upon a forum that taught me how to rebroadcast publicly available video streams, and created like a video portal where you could watch television channels live and direct and streaming with very little buffering from any desktop on earth. And it was an experience as a solo founder to learn and develop these skill sets that I didn't even know existed. It was very an immature time, especially for UX and for like UI design. It was just graph design back then, or web design. So I learned the pitfalls of bad design by failing, and then learning what good design was from iteration on the fly. I learned front-end web development and how to build a website, followed by back-end Flash video encoding. And I wasn't a great developer at any point, but I was so dedicated to seeing this product come to life that I spent all my free time and all my work time, nights and weekends, whatever it was, learning how to do this and building something and seeing it come alive from just an idea into, you know, a popular digital product.
Great, thank you guys so much. So as we wrap it up, I wanted to give you guys each one more opportunity to speak once and for all, whether it's something that you feel inclined to share, maybe something when you were driving here, you're like, oh, I'm gonna share that, and you haven't had a chance yet. Or maybe you just are a mind reader and you just have the perfect thing to say for the folks here today. So go ahead. Let's start with Justin.
Yeah, as corny and as cliche as this sounds, like, one thing I was really, really serious about earlier is definitely wishing I would have made the jump a little sooner. So for those in here that are interested in possibly changing careers, you know, I'm not saying quit your job and just figure it out like I did. But if you're really truly passionate, you have stuff like GA, which offers a ton of even like workshops, a 2-hour workshop. They have the part-time courses, the boot camps, if you're really serious. But yeah, if you have that itch, you know, definitely start exploring it now. Definitely start, there's, you know, meetups, reach out to people on LinkedIn, you know, grab coffee with them just to find out about what they do. I know it seems intimidating, but if you're really serious about it, then I'm positive you can make it work. So.
I would say also for people that are considering changing careers, I think the most important quality in being successful in the switch is having a lot of grit and being willing to just put in the work to make that switch and dedicating your all to it and going in, you know, head first into everything and not holding back and not being like 50-50 wishy-washy about it. Just like go for it and be ruthless and figure it out and you'll do a great job. Like, I think more than being like naturally talented at something, it's like being able to work hard and persevere and make mistakes, but then like not get discouraged about it and just keep going.
Great, guys. From my perspective, it is first and foremost to do what you love. If you're not doing what you love, then every day is work. If you're doing what you love, every day is amazing. You won't be able to get out of bed doing something you don't love. You won't be motivated to stay up and go past your bedtime and create solutions to impossible challenges if you don't have the passion and the drive and the motivation to do so. Once you find what you love, go after it relentlessly. And it doesn't matter what people say. This is your vision, your life, and you're only given one life to live. So live it to its fullest. And then ask yourself this question once you hone in on it. It's a litmus test whether it's just in the moment excitement or whether this is actually a lifelong dream. Are you excited about it right now? Will you be as excited about it tomorrow? And will you be as excited about it 5 years from tomorrow? And if the answer is yes to all three, you've hit a home run and you've found your calling. If it's not, take a step back. This could be a hobby or something fun to explore, but it's not your lifelong vision. After that, surround yourself with people that inspire you, people that will hold you high, and people that you can eventually call partners and comrades and colleagues, and that are headed in the same direction, swimming upstream together. And more so than anything, you know, positive disposition will get you through all of those challenges, because it's tough becoming an expert. You have to put in 10,000 hours, and you're only going to put in 10,000 hours of grit if you really are excited to be doing this every single day. I started my company, Dogtown Media, 7 years ago. And I wouldn't be here right now if I didn't love what I do, if I wasn't passionate about what I do, if I was invested in like building a team that also loves what they do. And I hope you guys get to discover that as well.
Wow, let's give him a round of applause. A lot of great wisdom and stories and inspiration shared in the last hour and a half. So thank you guys for being so open and honest and candid with us here today. Just a word of encouragement. Like, I know you guys could have all been so many different places today and you chose to be here for whatever reason. Maybe you're still figuring that out. Maybe you'll never know. But take this opportunity before you leave to get whatever you came here for. So whether that's, you know, learning more about GA, maybe, you know, getting clarity on an idea or project that you have, you know, pick any of these guys' brains if they're going to stick around, or connect with each other. So just encourage you to make the most of this situation here today. So thank you guys. What a great panel. Check out Dogtown Media if you haven't had a chance. And if you have any interest in checking out my podcast, Are You Being Real? It's on iTunes. My Instagram is Are You Being Real? And my specialty is helping people get clear on what's most important to them and taking action to make it happen. So.
And real quick in closing, thank you, Mark Shapiro, for coming out on such short notice and such an impactful like moderator. You really brought your all. And
this is my first time.
Amazing.
Thank you. All right. Enjoy the rest of your night.
Yeah. Thank you guys for coming. Really appreciate it,
buddy.
Thank you. the hardest part to overcome.
It's like, hey, it's
The second one is one thing that I didn't really do that. So then, dude, it's just, I wish I had a fast water department, but it's just work, man. Keep working, like, it, that's what it is. And I'm like, teaching, and like, cool.
Oh, yeah,
You might have tried squeezing over 8 years ago.
Communication majors. touch upon, like the passion, like when you bring in clients, and to, you know, even if you do purposeful work, like what the, sometimes it's just like a writer that you should deliver to. So how do you as a community also to engage in not being a present compared to like creativity, but being able to actually develop your passion and creativity while having to deliver on all of these things?
Keeping those things to all schools, and yeah, not day-to-day tasks.